Welcome to our corner where we talk about the Streets of Avalon role-playing game. I'm Chris.
And I'm Brett.
And today we're going to talk about the history of monsters in the city of Avalon to stay on the theme of us talking about monsters. Now,
interesting.
Yeah. The planet that Avalon is on is the place where all these things from outside of reality have run to in known existence to survive the Erligian forces that are out there.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's bad, right? Like all these things are here. They're weird and they're not humans and they're not dwarves and they're not elves. So they're amongst us or amongst the people of Avalon. So how did they make it here first off? And then how have they evolved on the planet and especially, of course, in the city, which is where the setting of the game actually takes place?
Let me do a quick piece on the Bargemen. So where the Bargemen came from is another world.
Really? Okay, so they're also aliens.
They're absolutely aliens.
Are humans aliens too?
No. Humans are from here.
So humans, elves, and dwarves are from here.
Absolutely from here.
Okay.
The Bargemen came from another place, water living people. When things started to go to hell in their world because of Erlig, they fled. They started sailing. They're like, there's something over there. They're pathfinders, right? Moana, right? We're going to find something. They keep going and they keep going. Their belief in their god and their magic and so forth, they basically sailed from where they were to here. The eldest of the eldest have stories about it, but they don't talk about it all.
That's wild, right? That's a cool concept, right?
So when they came, they brought certain things with them that also wanted to live. The Penangalon, that weird headed vampire that floats around with its innards hanging out. They brought that with them. They brought things with them because these creatures lived amongst them, fed off them, were their natural foes, enemies, and so forth, stowaways on ships, infected, and so forth. They brought much with them. When they opened the path, as the gate would close behind them, other things would slip through.
I love that. That's so good. They're one of the people that like allowed other things to get here,
though. Yes.
They kind of paved the way. Were they the first ones here, or were they not?
They were not the first ones here. They came in after the Soul War. The Lamplighters, unfortunately, when they came, following behind them, were things like demons and devils and so forth, because they're effectively peers.
Oh, interesting.
In a way, like power level wise, similar type of existence in a way.
Yeah, I feel you.
So they arrive here. Elves, dwarves, and humans from magic, because of how magic works, they're able to, like, hey, they used to be able to do things. They could open portals. They could summon things. They could pull things forward. As things start to dissolve and break down, some of the things that you pull forward, and you do have the classic. When I was a kid, I would first read this. This, the owlbear, is some crazed wizard's experiment. That was the explanation you got, right?
Yeah.
So there are things like that, right? When you see a flesh golem or you see something that's just weird. Yeah, somebody made that. Mm-hmm. Some nutball wizard did that thing where alchemist poured a thing on it. And oh my gosh, that's how I got Splasher Beasts or whatever.
Yeah, let's put one of the more deadly birds of prey and mix that with a bear. It seems like a great idea.
Why would we not do that? Exactly. What could go wrong?
Nothing. That guy got eaten.
Yeah.
That guy's curiosity was bigger than his lifespan.
So of course there's things that are native to the area, right? You've just got stuff that's here. For me, I've always believed that the fae creatures were not necessarily from here. They came here. Many of them are unseelie, the darker side, the more capricious side of the fae, because of what happened to them. They have a long racial memory of what was destroyed, what they lost in their fae wild, how it was all eaten, and this because is all that's gone. Left.
Yeah.
So they're cranky about that, and rightfully so. So there's plenty of stuff that's here, that's naturally here, like the kobolds. The kobolds are just, they live here.
Okay.
So the goblins and the kobolds, as I said before, they kind of fight for the same space. Kobolds, from their perspective, are like, fuck you. We were here first. These little bastards showed up and start stealing babies and whatever. What's going on?
Yeah, I love that these people just show up on this planet, which is not their planet, right? Like this plane of existence, not their plane of existence. They're like, let's fight a territory war for something that's not actually ours.
Exactly. So it's not like a big spaceship shows up, boom, it drops an entire civilization on the planet. This happens over time, dribs and drabs. There's a hole here. There's a portal there. Someone called the thing.
Yeah, we're talking thousands and thousands of years of immigration, of refugees, essentially.
So the Soul War was the thing when the big push happened, when Oathbreaker, the dwarf, accidentally, on purpose, gets the brain gorges here, and everything goes to shit. One of the things that happens after the Soul War is, or I should say during the Soul War, is that Erlig's forces, or his frontline troops, right, is because Erlig's on the outside doing his thing. He's got his minions and cultists like any good horrible entity does. It's called the Soul War because Erlig's forces were literally using souls. They were undead all over the place.
Oh, okay.
Right? So their armies, undead forces.
I had no idea. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's part of where it comes from. So yes, they were undead. You had ghosts, wraiths, you know, maybe a skeleton or something. But the more vicious of the undead, your liches and so forth, these are things that came about through the Soul War.
I love this podcast because I just talked to Brett about the history of Avalon. And like, I know a lot about it. I might be the person that knows the second most in the face of the
planet
about this, the setting. But there's just things I still don't know, even though I've been working on it for like 3 years. There's just things I don't know.
One of the questions you had for me was like, well, the first entity here would have been the Lamplighters.
They actually were the ones that showed up first. Interesting. Yep.
So the Soul War also, it caused a major shift, cataclysm to the face of the world. Avalon was not, well, the ocean outside of Avalon's a hell of a lot bigger now than it used to be.
The lake that abuts the southern port of Avalon is where Thorbrandor used to be. Like, that was, like, if you go out a mile or so into the lake, that's where the city center was. Like, it's just gone. Yes.
It's just gone.
Which shows how big Thorbrandor was, right? Because Avalon's just a small size of what Thorbrandor actually was.
So the dwarves I've talked about this a little bit before. Dwarves are 100% immortal. The dwarves, unless they die a couple different ways. One is violence. You can kill them. They can kill themselves, or they lose their work. The dwarves they lock in saying, this is my job, this is my function, this is my work. It's kind of automatonish in a way, but they lose themselves in their function. Dwarven librarians in Axis Mundi, this is their job. This is what they do. It provides them a reason to keep going.
See the episode on Axis Mundi for how interesting that was that I didn't know about that. I'm like, well, that's really cool.
Thank you. That was fun. So from the dwarves meeting the other entities and such, at first they're like, okay, they're just other things. Whatever. No big deal. When the Lamplighters show up and start talking to the dwarves or even the elves that are there, still fairly young at that time. Elves live a very goddamn long time, but not quite as long. But as the dwarves and the elves are figuring this out, they start talking to Lamplighters, learning things. So, of course, as you learn things from the Lamplighters fresh from where they came from, ooh, what's this? Ooh, what's that? What else is out there?
Oh, man.
Some dumbass starts poking the bear, right?
Instead of they were curious instead of, like, taking heed of the warning?
Yes. And you do have some folks that are not just curious. They're 100% malevolent.
Sure.
You know, the dwarves are not like this perfect monolithic, we're all lawful good types, or nor were the elves. You had corruption and you had people who thought, I didn't like this. I don't like the clan system. I don't like the High King. I don't like this. How can we do things different? When the Lamplighters came and some of the devils and the demons, the corruptors, started to come with them, the Lamplighters are bringing knowledge and light and all this great information and warnings and so forth, sneaking behind them in the shadows of their light. Are these little nasty sons of bitches that just start poking holes in your brain. Like, hey, yeah, I don't like the High King either. You know, that clan leader, if you only knew this thing, which I can tell you, and I don't need anything right now, right? So those Faustian bargains start getting
built. We're talking about the brain gorgers and the whisperers and the things that can get inside you, which is why Erlik is known as the Whisperer in a lot of cases.
Exactly. When it comes to undead, there's lots of good reasons why a necromancer would want their undead army, right? Because, I mean, just classic. It's fun. you need undead.
Cheap labor, if you ask
me. Yes, very cheap labor. Were-creatures, that comes with the land, that comes with the territory.
Sure.
Just things that are of the earth and so forth. It's a natural myth. Dragons were here at the beginning. So the dragons were here. Giants were here before. Outlands, way the hell outside.
That's interesting. Do they still exist, giants? Are they out there somewhere?
I have run a couple different adventures in the far outlands, and I have had the players run into giants and one big MF and dragon, which they accidentally turned into an eternally hungry, undead, immortal beast. And that's on them. That's their fault.
Wow. That sounds awful.
It was awful. That was terrible.
Why has that thing not come to Avalon to eat the people there yet?
Because I haven't wanted
to destroy my city yet.
I haven't wanted to do that yet. I'm like, that was way out there. It's gonna take a while.
Imagine what would happen if that happened. Like, let me just kick into what would probably happen, because there's like lots of terrible things in the city of Avalon, right? But there's lots of powerful things hiding in the city of Avalon. So it'd be like the Avengers or the Super Friends being like, we should probably stop trying to kill each other or do whatever we're doing and save the city.
Yeah, it's, you know, Clark Kent takes the glasses off. All right, fuck this. That's it. Superman time. You know, it's gonna get ugly.
And it's not just a Superman. It's like 50 Supermen.
Yeah. Haleth, a.k.a. Odin, is like, that's it. I'm out of retirement. I'm coming back.
Well, yeah. There's the dragon that's sitting under the city, too. All the dwarves are like, oh, they're going to blow up our city. We should probably stop this.
We should do something.
Any of the, like, the fey queens or ladies or lords that are, like, hiding in the city, we're like, we should probably not let them destroy our city, right? Like,
so, excuse me. One of the things I also, just from a outside coming in, is half-orcs, when I would have people like be an outlander, one of the ways that folks like, hey, could I be, back when I was using D&D a lot, I really like half-orcs. I'm like, that makes a really good like outlander barbarian. You're from somewhere way the hell out. Less the very monstrous first or second edition or half-orcs, with more of the kind of 5e style half-orc. Still big and strong and tough. People, oh, you're from the outlands. You're crazy. There's orcs, there's trolls, there's ogres. But those are things that were here.
Okay. So this world used to be kind of like a standard fantasy world before everything went really sideways, right?
Yeah, it had its you know, differences. Like, oh, dwarves are immortal and they live longer than elves. Oh, that's interesting. Some of that stuff. But the thing that really made it interesting was the Lamplighter's arrival and then Erlig and the Soul War. The Soul War cracked and just shaped everything.
That is the thing that's interesting to me, because it changes everything about the setting. It makes it the idea that there's nothing out there, like, that is what, to me, that and the fact that there's just a bunch of refugees from different dimensions and places here is what makes Avalon to me.
Hey folks, Chris here. I just wanted to jump in and say we are part of the Polygamerist Podcast Network. And with that, there's some great shows on the Polygamerist Podcast Network that you might want to listen to, like Pandas Talking Games. These are queer gamers talking about tabletop role-playing games and making outtakes. Join Pandas, Phil, and Senda every other Wednesday answering listener questions about playing, running, and designing TTRPGs. It's like Car Talk, but for your games. Now let's get back to the show.
So when I have introduced elves in the past, they have all met dark elves. And for me, instead of them being classic drow dark elves, I took a page, if you will, from the Dragonlance dark elves. So Dragonlance dark elves are just dark elves. They're not, at least back in the old days, when Weiss and Hickman first wrote them, Dalmar and the others were not like black skinned, white haired. They were just elves that were evil. Mm-hmm. So these elves are effectively permanently an unseelie type of elf, a number of them, much like the one of my characters. The one of the first things I ran in the Outlands was the guys were playing, and they encountered a bunch of dwarves in this outlandish cave system that were imprisoned by other dwarves. Like, that's weird. What are these weird gray-skinned, invisible, enlarging Duergar dwarves? What are they doing? Like, oh, those are the ones that betrayed the other dwarves and enslaved them. And oh my gosh, this was so, they've effectively kicked off an entire civil war within that world, within a little realm. So a lot of things post the Soul War is similar to, it's the rebuilding, right? It's like Europe after World War One. Like, okay, cool, all right. Oh shit, World War Two. Okay, whew, all right. Let's try it again. Let's get back together. Kind of piece this here. It's
ever since then, it's just bad.
It's been bad, and part of it is because that was also when Erlig arrived. There's nothing else, so everything that's here is all that is. As we said at the top of all this stuff, you know, it's that's all there is, and the more you dig into it and the more you understand, and the more the dwarves knew it and the elves learned it, they're like, oh my God, this is horrible. What do we do? We're stuck here. We're stuck here insofar as that there's literally nothing else. It's pressing horror on top of us. Is there something we should do? Should we do anything? I don't know.
Just here. That's it.
And when you get go ahead.
When you have people that, like the Lamplighters and the dwarves and a couple other beings that can live forever, they're just like, I don't know what we're supposed, like, that's why you have cynical Lamplighters. That's why you have these dwarves that are just like focused on the thing that they do instead of like trying to help, because that's the only thing they got left to hold on to, or they'll be done. There's just nothing.
Now, Avalon is the greatest and largest city left of the last bastion of civilization, right? It's also a wonderful, that Mediterranean analog melting pot where there's all this stuff here. And because of that, a lot of the things come here, right? Trolls in the basement. You've got undead problems. You've got goblins. You've got kobolds. You've got werecreatures. You've got vampires. It's a big goddamn city if we talk about it.
It's something like 30 miles across one way, 30 miles across the other way. It's gigantic. It's as big as you need it to be.
Yes.
Small. Whatever you want it to be size-wise, it's not small.
One of my favorite things I did was running it in my one of my friends, Aiden, was like, he said, how far is it? And so we go, God, it's got to be 50 miles to the gate. And he looked at me and goes, it can't be that far. I said, you're asking a guy who's never been there. Like, oh, okay. So we kept asking. He got different numbers. It's like, take you about half a day to get there, 50 miles, 20 miles.
You get yourself a carriage, it might take you, you know, like 9 hours to get there.
Yeah, it's like, he kept getting odder numbers. So like, well, you could go figure it out. But because Avalon is where things are happening, and then this wonderful place where people are trying to figure out what to do, what's to be done, holding on to what's left, it's walled. And I loved having a walled city because it puts a clear boundary of like, this is what's in and everything else is out.
Yep.
And what's in then is like, okay, we're living here. And it also kind of the subcontext, if you will, is the idea of a siege. The outside world is everything else outside of it is gone. Avalon, it's literally under siege from extraplanar forces outside of it.
Yep.
And you're within a walled city within a, and in the outlands is crazier, bigger stuff potentially, or things you've heard about. Maybe it's not there. Who knows? But I live here now and I want to make my neighborhood the safest place I can.
Yep.
When a lot of the monsters and the creatures and things you're dealing with, I've had, let's see here, displacer beasts. I like pulling those guys in, big, weird cat things, shape changers, just any creature I could, you know, pull out that I like to have. Garbugs, which is a weird fiend follower thing for first edition, scares the shit out of people. It's a big 60-foot lobster bee. It's horrible. It's a horrible, terrifying thing. Giant frogs, just stuff. Big rats, tree ants, all this stuff. Everything kind of grows in this space. Everything shows up. Everything comes in. It's almost like that unspoken, everybody knows the end is nigh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if anybody could do something, it's probably going to come out of Avalon.
And that's why this kind of stuff, this history, these things, they color the entirety of the setting. That's why, we put the kind of pulpy noir thing on it because it's urban fantasy, you know, medieval urban fantasy, but it's still urban fantasy, but it's got that subtext, that background to it, which makes everything the way that it is.
One of the things that this reminds me of is, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I know I've said this before. I used to run Vampire a lot and running in cities, obviously for Vampire the Masquerade back in the old days. One of the things that I used to think about was like, these poor humans that live in Chicago, my Chicago full of vampires is just slaughtering people left, right, and center. I'm like, why haven't they left? I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, it's just dangerous. It's so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And then the more I would look at like how my human NPCs are running and what I was doing with them and so on, I'm like, they're trying to do the best they can in a bad situation. Some of the monsters, like we talked about before from Monster Hunting, they're doing the best they can in a bad situation. You're trying to solve the monster problem, trying to solve whatever's going on. But the other thing that kind of, it's doom and gloom on the outside, but at the end of it, yeah, there's critters to fight, there's problems to solve and so forth, but you're still trying to do the best you can for your neighborhood and the people you love and care about. Yeah, it kind of sucks right now, but it's okay because we're going to get through this together.
Yeah.
Kind of vibe. Yeah, of course. You could have somebody like my son, AJ, who's playing an early cleric. You're a little bugger. But
he figured it out.
He figured it out. But that's kind of the noir thing, right? It's ethically gray stuff. We got to figure out how we're going to get through this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the monsters come into, is that the creatures that came in with the lamplighters, the creatures that came with the bargemen and so forth. It's like, okay, we got to go deal with the pangolin. How do we do that? Well, seems like a bargeman thing. Let's go talk to some of their elders and see what they'll tell us, because we got to find out how to solve this damn problem.
Oh, man. That was fun. That was fun to talk about that, Brett. I like hearing about that history. Yeah, it does. It makes perfect sense to me.
Okay, good.
So why don't you tell me...
Thank you for listening to Under the Lamplight, the Streets of Avalon role-playing game podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please follow or subscribe on whatever podcatcher you listen to this on. If you'd like to get the playtest book or keep up with the ongoing development of the game, check out thestreetsofavalon.com, our home for all your Streets of Avalon content. And we'll see you under the lamplight next week.